This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
It is Danny Gallant. Waiting on Quandre Diggs here. Seattle Seahawks safety is going to call us. And in many ways, he was an example of how Seattle got better as the season went along. For all the emphasis we put in offseason acquisitions, remember it was Jadeveon Clowney in August, followed by Quandre Diggs being acquired midseason that probably had the biggest impact of any newcomers on Seattle's defense last year, Paul.
Yeah, and look, the kind of impact that he brought to the table, it did not show up on the stat sheet, but you saw a guy that when he jumped on the field, I mean, from a hitting perspective, from a making plays perspective, it was such a big jump in the arm for this team.
Why is that, do you think? And I don't say Quandre Diggs is a really good player, but it seems like the elevation in Seattle's defense upon his arrival, it's not like he was an all-pro player. It was puzzling to me how much better the defense got when he was back there. And maybe it's as simple as Pete's defense requires a level of competency that they did not have at that position prior to Diggs arriving, and that in many ways the defense broke down because they didn't have, they needed somebody who at the very least played with Diggs' skill set to be able to do it.
Right, and that's the big thing. They wanted somebody who I think was confident playing the position, and then also they felt like could make plays in a variety of different ways because they didn't have that with Tedrick Thompson. They really didn't have that with Lane O'Hill. That first couple of game stretch where he joined the defense, there was a time where it looked like, hey, this defense actually might be able to keep it together, to hold things up, come playoff time, especially if they go up against an offense that's really good, because that was their biggest problem the whole season leading up to that point.
It's possible to look at Diggs' impact and be really optimistic and to think, hey, it doesn't take that much to make a huge difference in this defense, that it's not as far away as it feels when you look at them statistically last season. The flip side of that is that, man, you were in such a sorry state that you needed basically to have a guy that was cast off by another franchise to be able to acquire him mid-year to make that sort of it's tough to come up with sort of a rationale for exactly how to make sense of Diggs. Is it a reflection of how close Seattle was, or is the fact that he was necessary to make such an important evidence that they're a long ways away?
Right. And, you know, I think when you look at the rest of the secondary, what can they take away from him? What about his game maybe have they seen over the last couple of games that he played with them, of course, and taking into this offseason, can maybe somebody out there be the kind of playmaking takeaway artist that Diggs showed that he was able to do? I mean, against the Rams, he was really the only guy that showed up in that game on defense. And, I mean, look, they had such a difficult time stopping guys over in the middle of the field. But he had the interception return for a touchdown. He had another interception on a deep pass by Jared Goff. I thought he played really well in that game. And you need to get more of that from the secondary. And that's why they traded for Quentin Dunbar. They're hoping Dunbar can do some of the same things over the last couple of seasons. It's not just stopping passes that are thrown towards the many receivers that the Seahawks are going up against. It's taking the ball away. It's creating a takeaway, and it's giving the Seahawks more chances offensively, as opposed to just playing this battle of bend but don't break, bend but don't break, bend but don't break. Because eventually, when you go up against good offenses, like the Packers proved, you will break. You need to have takeaways in this league to win.
Can you improve your pass rush by improving your secondary?
I hope so. I think that's what the Seahawks are hoping too.
Yeah, we usually think of it in the opposite way, right? Is that the pass rush helps out your coverage. The pass rush is the best way and the quickest way to neutralize, and I think that's true. But pass rush is excruciatingly expensive. Like, we're seeing that right now. Pass rush is really, really expensive. And maybe Quandre Diggs is an example of how getting a guy, it's more possible or more feasible to have quick improvement of your secondary based on the performance of a guy, because Quandre Diggs is someone that they picked up midseason and did make a huge, huge impact.
Right. And, you know, you look at cornerbacks and you look at all the things that potentially they can bring to the table. That's one of the things that can help change a defense overnight. if you go back and you look at those, that later dynasty of the New England Patriots, and we saw it firsthand against the Seahawks when they had Darrelle Revis and they brought in Brandon Browner and Malcolm Butler was first showing glimpses that he actually might be a pretty good corner. That's how that team won Super Bowls. They got Stephon Gilmore, Defensive Player of the Year, as another member of their secondary. Elite corners have helped teams that don't have a great pass rush turn the corner and quickly. We didn't necessarily see that from Kansas City. I think they like what they got from Tyrann Mathieu as just a presence this past season. But if you can have maybe more guys like that in the secondary, theoretically the pass rush will improve because it maybe gives that pass rush, I don't know, a split second, a full second more to get after the quarterback.
It is Danny and Gallant, and we are really excited to have Quandre Diggs. He joins us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Quandre, first of all, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I appreciate you guys for having me. Sorry to be a little late. I was in the middle of a workout in my garage at the moment.
Oh, I want to hear about the workout in the garage. Do you have a improvised gym that you put together? Because I think we're all in quarantine life trying to come up with ways to stay healthy. What do you got set up for yourself?
Yeah, right now, you know, I have a little quarantine gym. My girlfriend's been hounding me for freaking, I don't even know how long, probably like a year or two since we've been in the house about making the garage a little gym. So we have a Peloton bike, got like some medicine balls, some bands, bench. Then we got like some ab rollers and stuff like that. My weight actually got delayed. So I haven't been able to get them yet, so I'm using doing a lot of band workouts at the moment.
Yeah, one of the unexpected things that I found this out because I was looking for 15-pound dumbbells because, you know, I lift like that. And they're nowhere to be found. You can't find dumbbells anywhere right now.
No, because they're gone.
Everywhere is sold out. It's very, very funny.
Everywhere. I ordered my dumbbells about 3 weeks ago from Power Block, and I got, like, I freaking got like my kettlebell attachment. I got my bench from them, but the dumbbells, they were just like, oh, you know, we're kind of backed up with all the orders, so you know it'll be another 2 to 4 weeks. I'm just like, well, I ain't got nothing but time to wait, so might as well just wait.
you got to put this gym setup up on your Twitter at QDig6, which is I think you're a great follow, especially when you and Tyler Lockett are going back and forth trash talking with one another. The Seahawks brought in another member to your secondary, Quinton Dunbar. They get in via trade. Have you had a chance to talk with him? And what do you know about his game?
I talked to Q a little bit last week on Instagram, of course, because, you know, like, you can't see anybody. But talked to him on Instagram, and, you know, he's excited to be there. He's excited to be a part of the secondary, you know, to kind of, you know, to help us put together, you know, a good year. You know, adding him to the secondary with Shaq and, you know, Trey and Ugo and myself and B-Mac and Marquise, you know, it's going to be fun. You know, I like Q's game. He's a former receiver, so, you know, he sees the game a different way. You know, he sees it a way, you know, through the offensive lens, which is really dope. So I've heard a lot of great things about him. He's actually teammates with one of my good friends, Landon Collins, and Landon spoke very highly of him. So, you know, I'm just excited, you know, to welcome him into the room, and, you know, we're going to have some fun when, you know, it's that time to play.
We're talking to Quandre Diggs here, Seahawks safety. Quandre, I know how much everybody loved the impact you had after your arrival in midseason from Detroit. What's it been like for you? This is your first offseason getting ready for the Seahawks, knowing you're a Seahawk. How has it been for you to reflect on what happened in that half year you were with Seattle?
It's cool. Just, you know, for me, I remember I told my girlfriend this when I got home in January, and then this might have been like February. We were actually talking on it. And I was just telling her, you know, it's like, it's going to be cool to actually, you know, put an off season together with the guys on the team, you know, because when I came in mid season, it was just like you're throwing into the fire, which is totally fine with me, you know what I mean? But, you know, being able to train and be able to prepare my mind and go into that atmosphere and just that environment just to have fun and play ball, you know, is dope. And I was telling her, I was like, you know, I'm kind of, and this is, like I said, in February, so you weren't thinking OTAs and stuff was going to be canceled. And I kind of got in a little trouble for this, but I told her, I was just like, you know, it's kind of cool thinking about how excited I am to get back to work with those guys. And she kind of took it the wrong way at first, thinking I was excited to get back away from her. But it was more of just the idea of, you know, you going to work and work being fun. And, you know, you just enjoying the teammates that you're around. You enjoying the coaches. And I think that's what, you know, what really means a lot to me, is that I'm genuinely happy, you know, knowing that I'm a Seattle Seahawk and, you know, knowing that the game is fun again for me.
Yeah, you mentioned that it's fun again. I can imagine going from Detroit to Seattle. Yeah, it's got to be a tremendous sense of reinvigoration when you got there. I imagine also this offseason with the social distancing and all the things that we put in place to stop the spread of COVID-19, that you probably want to be around these guys more, as you just mentioned. How have you guys been staying in touch with one another as you guys get ready for the season?
You know, right now we're at the point where it's more just, you know, you texting guys. You know, you just checking on guys, seeing how guys are. You know, I try to check in on the young bucks like Keith and Hugo, you know, just to make sure, you know, because it's their first off season. So for them, you know, they don't really know, you know, what to expect. And, you know, so I just check on those guys, make sure those guys are good. You know, that everybody else are veterans with B-Mac and, you know, Shaq and Trey. And, you know, those guys going to work their tail off regardless. But you just check on the young bucks, make sure everything's good with them, you know, extended first off season for them, which is unusual. You know, we'll be getting ready to go back in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So you just check, make sure those guys are working, which I know they are. But, you know, you just want to touch base with them. And I've talked to Bobby. I've talked to KJ. You know, I talk to those guys pretty frequently because, you know, those are two of the leaders on the defense. You know, I just want to make sure everything's good.
You mentioned, and we're talking to Quandre Diggs, you mentioned a Peloton bike. Have you raced any guys on the team on Peloton, or I've seen some players are having sort of group rides. Have you hooked up with anybody and raced them yet?
Not on our team, you know. One of our former players, Adrian Colbert, that's with the Dolphins now. Me and him, we got a bike ride at 11:30. Me, him, and then Adrian Phillips, who just signed with the Patriots. We got a bike ride at 11:30. Landon Collins rode with us last week. So, you know, that's kind of how it is, but honestly, for me, those guys have been riding the bikes. They had like 50 rides, and last week is my first week. So I kind of got thrown in the fire again, and a baptism by fire, that's kind of what it's been.
it's challenging. Who's the instructor you guys use?
We use different people. We don't have any, you know, just favors or anything. We just, you know, we pick who we think going to give us a good ride that day, and we just kind of go, and, you know, those guys usually beat me by a good margin, but, you know, at least I'm giving a great effort.
You and Tyler Lockett are best friends. This is a tremendous opportunity for you right now, Quandre, to call Tyler Lockett out to a Peloton challenge. I mean, we're looking for anything sports-wise to watch right now. I would totally watch a one-on-one matchup between you two.
His Peloton is in Seattle, and he's actually in Texas right now, so I can't even challenge him to a one-on-one because he doesn't even have his bike with him. And he said he's not going to go back to Seattle for a while until everything clears up.
Man, he's got to get another Peloton.
Man, they all backed up. Now they back ordered. So I ordered mine about a month ago. And, you know, I have guys, friends that's tried to order them, and they're just super backed up at the moment.
What have you been doing, Quandre? I mean, following your Twitter, you are a big sports fan and somebody that likes watching things. What are you doing to pass the time? Because I think we're all wrestling with it, not having our sports fix or being able to watch or talk. I mean, really trying to come up with things. What sort of solutions have you found?
For me, it's been tough. You know, I freaking been watching Netflix with my girlfriend, watching freaking Puppy Pals with my daughter. So I just been trying to find anything just to try to get my mind off sports, really, because, you know, you look at ESPN, there's really nothing on there. They play old games, which are cool, you know what I mean? I got to watch the 2005 National Championship game, Texas versus USC, and that was one of my favorite moments of this little quarantine deal. But I've been playing a lot of video games, just trying to go outside more. I think this is a great opportunity for, you know, us as a whole. You know, I think we've taken some things for granted with just being able to go outside. We need to exercise more, you know, so you take those things for granted. And even myself, you know, just walking around my neighborhood, it's been like real relaxing, being able to push my daughter in the stroller, me and my girlfriend just go on a walk. I think, you know, that's been really dope. So that's kind of how I've been keeping myself busy, but I'm a big video game person.
I got to ask about Tiger King. Have you watched Tiger King yet?
Yeah, I watched Tiger King like 2 weeks ago. A little different. It's definitely a little different. I wasn't going to watch it. Definitely wasn't going to watch it. It's been like that with a lot of shows actually on Netflix. I'm like, I'm not going to watch that. I'm not going to do that. And then my girlfriend started watching it. And, you know, if you don't spend time with him, you know, it becomes a whole big ordeal. So I actually got stuck watching Tiger King and I ended up enjoying it. It was different. And, you know, I've been watching the All-American football Netflix series, and I think we're about to start Ozark. So, you know, we just try to pass time as much as we can and just try to stay in the house as much as I can. Heck, I actually just tried to go out to some fields and, you know, try to do some running out there and do some cutting and some football stuff. But, heck, they got police driving around the fields and stuff, so... You know, those places, I don't even think they letting you, you know, train and stuff out there.
Ozark is good. Who was the worst character on Tiger King? Was it Joe Exotic? Was it Jeff Flo? Or was it Carol?
It's crazy because all three of them had some crookedness to them, I think. You know what I mean? I think, you know, just all in general, I really think Tiger King... I think he burned down the alligator, the crocodile or alligator thing. I think he did that and tried to set somebody else up to do it. But I really think he was the one that burned it down to get rid of all evidence.
He is Quandre Diggs. Quandre, it's awesome to talk to you. We really enjoyed getting a chance to meet you and watch you play last year. We're looking forward to this next season. We're grateful for you spending some time with us today. We'll let you get back to your garage workout. We appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all having me.
That is Quandre Diggs, a member of your Seattle Seahawks secondary. It's Danny and Gallant, and now it's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Yes.
What's going on, guys? That was a really fun interview. Thank you to Quandre Diggs for joining us. We've got another title added to Rob Gronkowski's resume as he wins WrestleMania in front of no fans.
He won the 24/7 championship, which sounds like it's a very excruciating belt to defend. Like, you have to be ready 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Like, you defend it at all times. Something tells me that I don't know if Rob knows exactly what he got signed up for there. It's weird watching things with no fans. Like, even if you just see a clip, it's very strange. And if they end up playing baseball games in front of no fans or basketball games in front of no fans, it's going to be exceptionally weird for all of us. I can't imagine athletes are going to be able to perform at as high a level as they would otherwise, because it just seems like you wouldn't have as much adrenaline if there's not people there to watch.
I there was a text earlier when we talked about this news, Danny, and they said it's not the first time that Rob Gronkowski has won a staged event. Your thoughts on that?
That's pretty funny.
That was a funny take. Look, I might start watching wrestling. I have asked people on the text line. Some have been convincing. One person says, "You need to, brother." That's good enough for me.
Why couldn't you watch wrestling? Because it was too risque,
allowed.
Too body.
Yeah, wasn't allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed. I mean, I wasn't allowed to watch cartoons. Do you think that my parents are going to let me watch wrestling? No, absolutely not.
My mom, throughout her life, laughed at me because I liked wrestling. She thought it was, she didn't even think it was just low class. Like, she thought it was stupid. Like, she would say, "Do you remember when you were 8 and you thought it was real?" It was like, I didn't really think it was real. She's like, "Yes, you did." Like, she did that, saying that to me when I was 44 years old. She was giving me a hard time about it.
Three NFL analysts, including former Seahawk Michael Robinson, warn against Cincinnati drafting Joe Burrow with the first overall pick.
That's weird.
Why
are they warning him against it? Like, why don't they want him to do it?
I don't know. Do they like Andy Dalton? I think for David Carr, who was one of the other analysts, it was, I think, because he likes Andy Dalton, which is surprising. Like, a quarterback standing up for another quarterback, not really surprising at all. But Joe Burrow won the Heisman. He threw like 60 touchdown passes in the SEC. I mean, why are you telling a Bengals team to avoid drafting a transcendent quarterback when they never find themselves in a situation like this? Because they're usually right in the middle of the pack amongst NFL teams, at least over the past decade or so.
maybe they're trying to do a service to the rest of the country. Maybe they know that Joe Burrow is good and that to have him drafted in Cincinnati would be to doom him to an at best mediocre and most likely awful career. Maybe they're trying to, like through sheer, like an act of kindness, to talk the Bengals out of it so we can be spared having him become the Ernie Banks of the NFL.
Sources familiar with the commissioner's conference call with the president yesterday say he believes the Bengals start off.
I think that's great to hear, and it should be encouraging for all sports fans. At the same time, man, I don't think any of us really know. Should football be able to start on time? I don't know. It seems like things have started to have hit their peak in other countries where they've dealt with COVID-19 first. But man, the Chinese Basketball Association just had to shut down again. Like that's the second time they started up again and then decided that they had to stop again. So I'd be real hesitant for anyone to think that, like, oh yeah, this will all be taken care of by then. But maybe that makes people feel better to hear that.
What is it based off of? That's my big question. The NFL's chief medical officer said that he was skeptical about the idea of the NFL starting the season on time. And he said, like, we shouldn't be putting a date on anything. I agree. Look, it would be great to have this kind of confidence that we, in a time right now where it's tough to feel good about a lot of things. But I don't think that there's any data that is indicating that this is suddenly more likely to happen.
You'll watch and see what happens in Europe. Europe's infection rates peaked before ours did, and start to see when they start playing soccer again and with crowds, and that'll probably be an indication of when that might come to the United States, although we have to wait and see, are we going to be able to sort of have flattened the curve as it appears is happening in different European nations. But the idea of a secondary wave of infections is very possible too. I don't think anybody knows, but maybe some people feel better hearing that, like, oh yeah, it'll be fine by then. And that helps them get through the next couple of weeks. I don't, for myself, I don't take any of these declarations to heart at all. I don't think it means it's more likely or less likely that it's going to happen on time. We just don't know.
Operating officer backs out from the new colors and logos of public dissent.
Yeah, that Kevin Demoff is facing up to it. It's a bad logo for a number of reasons. The fact that they're trying to and figure out what it looks like, you can't even see. It looks more like a Chargers logo because it seems that there's a C, but it's supposed to be the Rams horn. It looks like laundry detergent. That's what it looks like to me. It looks like laundry detergent. It looks like Surf. That's Surf. Come and get
it. It's not even Tide Pods.
It's not even Tide. It's not even Tide. It's off-brand. It looks like off-brand laundry detergent.
What a bunch of cowards. We're going to back down from our new logos and colors because the public doesn't like it? Make up your minds.
Well, the public's not wrong.
Man.
I agree, but at the same time, like, stick to your guns. Oh, the public's, like, not down with it. Oh, so you're going to design another one, and you're going to spend millions of dollars on another
bad
one?
Sure, but, fine. It's better than putting out something that's terrible.
Do you think they're going to get it right?
They, like, remade an entire Sonic movie because of that.
You know what? Here's the only thing that they can do to make the logo work is to just steal the Lakers logos and have the football team in that town pretend that they're the Los Angeles Lakers. That is it. Because that's the only only team in town that anyone cares about there.
That's kind of funny. I like that idea, Paul. That was a good solid
the LA
idea.
Lakers in the NFC West. Yeah, in LA.
Bit of sad news. Former New Orleans Saints kicker Tom Dempsey, who actually was born without toes on his kicking foot, has died at the age of 73 due to complications of the coronavirus.
Also, Bobby Mitchell, who was the first African-American player for Washington's franchise, also passed away. He was 84. Yeah, this is part of an unfortunate reality, is that this disease is tearing a swath through that generation of not just football players, but people. I read Michael Lewis, who wrote The Blind Side, Moneyball, a number of books. He wrote a really good piece in Bloomberg about that this is his father's generation. His father knows like 9 people who have died in New Orleans from COVID-19. It's just
awful.
Tearing a swath. It's absolutely brutal and frightening and heartbreaking.
It really is. I do want to say something positive just about Tom Dempsey. Tom Dempsey's career is one of the most improbable stories that you will see in sports. He was born with no toes on his right foot, no fingers on his right hand, and wore a custom flat front kicking shoe where his toes were supposed to begin. And in 1970, think about this, he kicked a 63-yard game-winning field goal with 2 seconds to go. Back in the day where everyone was toe-balling field goals, essentially. Maybe they had just started to bring in the soccer style. His story is an incredible one, and it's really sad to see that he had passed away.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny and Gallant. We have the final round of our rant draft, which I actually think is going pretty well, if only because it means that we get to play all sorts of rants, which are some of my favorite things in the world. So here we go. Round four.
Who says that sports are only played on fields, courts, and ice?
Playoffs? We'll talk about playoffs.
They're also played on podiums.
They are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
In locker rooms.
All y'all take this down. I'm pissed, man. I'm a soldier.
And wherever else you can jam a microphone.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is the Danny and Gallant Sports Rant Bracket on 710 ESPN Seattle.
And round four begins with Jessamyn McIntyre back on the clock. Her first three selections have all been men who have had enough. Herm Edwards being asked about why he's playing the game. You play to win the game. Then Dan Hawkins, ridiculous parents complaining about a lack of off time. And then Hal McRae, who had just been asked one too many questions about why he pinch hit so-and-so for so-and-so. Let's see how she goes with her fourth selection to try and round out this draft class.
Yes, I'm going to stray from my theme here because this is a post-game interview and it kind of falls more into the Richard Sherman category that Paul so selfishly drafted in the first round. But this is Bart Scott, who darn near ate Sal Palantonio's microphone after a Jets victory, and you just got to listen to the passion in his voice.
To all the non-believers, to all the non-believers, especially you, Tom Jackson. Let him on back, Keyshawn. Anybody can be beat. So how did that just feel? Feel great. Poetic justice. We know we were a much better team than we came up and represented ourselves. And we're pissed off. We're ready to come back and show what kind of defense, what type of team this was, what kind of character we had. We take a lot of slack. People gave us no chance, like we barely made the playoffs. We're a good football team. It looks like this team played with anger all day. Why, Bart? For all you non-believers, disrespect us, talk crap about the defense, like we're the third best defense in the league. All we hear is about their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed. 25th in the league, but we don't want to get disrespected. Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Everybody remembers the can't wait line, and I forget how impassioned the entire speech was. I absolutely love that from Bart Scott, and yes, biased are allowed in this tournament, and that is mine.
My least favorite selection thus far.
25th ranked defense can't stop a nosebleed.
I was there. I watched that game live. That was not a fun experience for me.
That's absolutely fantastic. You see the Jets winning and advancing on. So Jessamyn McIntyre finds a Jets rant near and dear to her heart. Next up is Lydia Cruz. Lydia's selections so far have been, I would say she's gone classic. Jim Mora with the diddly poo. Mike Gundy, I'm a man, I'm 40. And then David Bennett with somewhat of an underground classic, talking about he wants more dogs, no cats, no meow cats. Her fourth selection?
I'm going to draft for need right now, Danny, because we've got rage against the media. We've got rage against one's own team. But sometimes you want to rage against, I don't know, math, sabermetrics, facts. That's what happened when Don LaGreca went off about metrics in football.
You want sabermetrics? Offensive at Don LaGreca tweeted last night or said on the Michael K show, offensive line stinks. That's the stat. Give me a break. Was it the Pythagorean theorem? The Pythagorean theorem said that the Giants offensive line, that their record should be 1-1. That's what they sound like. It's football. I've been watching it for 40 years. 40 years. That's one of the worst offensive lines I've ever seen. And they have not gone this long without scoring 20 points since 77-78 when Joe Pisarcik was their quarterback. Patterson played Joe. So take that with your Pythagorean theorem. The Joe Pisarcik theorem. You're dead.
Now, the ability to pop his peas there goes understated. Like, that was actually, I don't know if you wrote it out in advance or just felt the flow, but the consonants he was using, the repetition of the hard peas was absolutely phenomenal. The Pythagorean, the Pisarcik.
I don't know how he brought the Pythagorean theorem into analytics talk, but I liked it.
Pythagorean wind theorem sometimes is something you hear thrown around a lot, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it has to do, you can project the team's win based on looking at points for and points against and say how many games they should have won or you would have expected them to win. Yeah, I don't really know about that one. Paul Gallant is our third entrant in the rant draft, and his first three picks went Richard Sherman. Then we got Jim Calhoun, get some facts and come back and see me, followed by Rick Pitino explaining to all of Boston that their best players weren't walking back through that door. Let's see where he goes in cut number three.
Okay, so this is going to be a series. John Tortorella was the head coach of my favorite hockey team, the 2004 Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning. And while he was coach of that team, he would go into back and forth with many a member of the media. But there is a specific back and forth that he had with a guy working for the New York Post that he calls Brooksy, that is a recurring theme over the course of his coaching career.
We know what we did.
What did you do?
Next question.
What did you do? I mean, you know what you did. What do you think you did?
Brooksy, if I want to explain it to you, I would. Next question.
Are you answering no questions or what?
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy. You get that through your head?
I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a waste of time.
Oh, then get the fuck out of here then.
I am.
Okay, see ya. Next question.
Right, yes. On cue. Next question.
He has subsequent interactions with him, too, which are classic.
They get better.
We'll play in the first round matchup. John Tortorella versus Larry Brooks, the fourth seed out of Paul's bracket. That brings it to me. My first three choices, I'm feeling very good about my draft. I got my favorite, which is Allen Iverson, the practice rant. And then Tommy Lasorda with a very, very specific attack on Kurt Bavakwa, who couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat, whom he'd send a limousine to make sure he's in the lineup, because he'll kick his butt twice every time he faces him. Then Denny Green. And finally, we're going to go, I don't think you can have a rant tournament without the greatest rant ever. Lee Elia, who supposedly after this happened, when the general manager who had heard what he said, heard a tape of what he had said about not just Chicago, but the Cubs fans specifically, asked him about it. And Elia claimed to have blacked out and didn't remember all of the things that he said here when he was objecting to the treatment of the home fans of his Cubs.
I'll tell you one thing. I hope we get hotter than just to stuff it up them 3,000 people that show up every day. Because if they're the real Chicago fans, they can kiss my right downtown and print it. They're really, really behind you around here. My what am I supposed to do? Go out there and let my players get destroyed every day and be quiet about it for the nickel dime people that show up? The don't even work. That's why they're out of the game. They only go out and get a job and find out what it's like to go out and earn a living. 85% of the world's working. The other 15 come out here. The playground for the.
When you say that your own fans are among the 15% that don't work, and that's why they come out to watch day baseball, that's a man that has become unhinged. There is your field, the 16 rants. You can talk about the omissions and who do we miss, who was on the bubble, the slights, the snubs that were there, and we'll start the first round matchups tomorrow. Coming up next, we're going to raise flags. That's next on Danny and Gallant.
From the pocket and flags everywhere. Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is Danny and Gallant. It's time that we put together the best of the worst. We take stock of everything that's happened. Cast and I going forward. Been a fun show today. Lots of rants. Let's start with Jessamine. Jessamine, do you have a flag today?
Oh, me? Yeah, thank you. I'm going to raise a flag for Quandre Diggs, who was kind enough to join us today. I love that we're able to talk to these Seahawks as they're doing their own thing to prepare for the upcoming season. And I loved his Netflix choices because they're very in line with mine. I watched Tiger King, getting very into season 3 of Ozark. So I've got that. And then also him just talking about spending so much time with his girlfriend and his daughter just made me happy to hear from him. So thank you, Quandre. You get my flag.
I also like the idea of all these NFL players racing each other on Peloton.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Yes.
Like, if you could live stream that, Twitch that, I think that you've got something on your hands.
Yeah, Isaiah Thomas, the cold-blooded Husky. He had one last week. He says, I get the Peloton, man, but that bike seat ain't it. Was his comment last week.
Yeah.
I think anybody that's ridden on a stationary bike or a bike of any kind after not riding for a while can appreciate. Lydia.
I'm going to raise a flag. This is just pandering, but to the 2012 defense, because watching that game yesterday, that was one of the most dominant defensive performances that I had seen, especially in that first half. And the Fail Mary game, of course, was our latest 7-10 rewind. And you kind of feel like you're watching that montage that happens in superhero movies, like as they're becoming a team. Like this is just right before they really emerge as the super dominant powerhouse. So it's fun to watch the beginnings of that. I mean, even KJ, just a monster out there. I think he led the team in tackles in that game, and it's fun. It was fun to watch.
It was a really fun game. And connected to that, I saw the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Jess, you just sent this around, announced their all-decade team for 2010. Is it the 2010s, the teens? How do you even refer to that?
The teens?
The tens.
I like it,
right?
The tens. I like the tens.
Okay, the tens.
Because 10, 11, 12 aren't teens.
Yeah. And it included
majority
Earl
wins, though. Come on.
Yeah. Earl Thomas, Bobby Wagner, and Richard Sherman were all
Correct.
Part of the all-decade team. Marshawn Lynch, the running back side. You know, should Russell have been the quarterback? It was Brady and Rodgers, which is tough to argue against. And Russell only had 8 of the 10 years. But it was interesting to see the selections.
Also, possibly controversial that Cam Chancellor did not make it over either Eric Berry or Eric Weddle.
Cam's a pretty good player, man. I'd take Cam over either one of those guys, and that's
Same.
No snub on either one of them.
If I had to push one out, I'm pushing out Eric Weddle.
I would agree with you. And Eric Weddle's a good player. Cam was the enforcer of that defense. I would have taken Cam over either of those. So shout out to the 2012 defense. Paul?
I'm going to raise a flag to Tom Dempsey, who's sadly passed away this weekend due to complications from the coronavirus. Tom Dempsey, for those who don't remember, is, for the longest time, was the record holder of the longest field goal attempt in NFL history. And what's crazy is he did it with half a foot. He was born with no toes on his right foot and no fingers on his right hand. He was nicknamed Stumpy, which is perhaps problematic in today's culture. In 1970, on November 8th, the New Orleans Saints, who he played for, were down 17-16 to the Detroit Lions with 2 seconds left. He went onto the field and remembered what Lou the Toe Groza had told him, because he didn't know how long the field goal was. Keep your head down and follow through. Here's Tom Dempsey from 63 yards away, as told by Don Crickey.
The longest field goal in National League history. They're sending him on with 2 seconds left. Scarpetti will hold. Here's a snap. The ball is down. Dempsey kicks. It's on the way. It is. Good. It's good. It's good. The Saints have won. The Saints have won. The stadium is wild. Dempsey is being mobbed. The time has run out. The Saints have won 19-17.
It's sad that he passed away at age 73, but the story of him overcoming a disability is one that's going to last forever. Rest in peace, Tom.
Well said, Paul. My flag is going to be thrown in the Los Angeles Rams because the only thing funnier than a team spending millions of dollars to come up with a bad logo is the team then coming out and trotting out to address the fact that their logo stinks and to read mean tweets, which is what Kevin Demoff did. If anybody's seen it, it looks like an advertisement for laundry detergent. It looks like an advertisement for perhaps a toilet bowl cleaner. It does not look like something you would want to represent your franchise in the NFL. It's got a swirl that kind of is a wave, but it's a ram too. The whole thing is just bad. It's bad. It's a soft shade of blue. It's a bad shade of gold. Like, all of the different things about it are bad. And the fact that they're owning up to it and coming out and admitting just makes it even better.
Just paint yourself like the Lakers. Just avoid all the confusion for all these silly people. They can't handle multiple teams. They can only handle the Lakers. Just trick them.
And the funny thing is they might be going back to the drawing board. Would you trust the same people to decide that picked this logo? Why would you give them a second bite at the apple? It seems terrible and totally fitting for that franchise. That's going to do it for us. I want to thank Jessamine McIntyre and Lydia Cruz and Paul Gallant. All of the effort that went into organizing our rant bracket. It was fun to talk to Quandre Diggs, the Professor John Clayton, as always, and Brock Heward with his one, I've got one gray hair. That's going to do it for us. He's Paul Gallant. He's a proud kitty cat king.
Yes, I am. And he is Danny O'Neill. And he is very comfortable taking on Brock Heward and his graying hair. So long. Farewell. I'm bummed out. My hair is graying already. And you'll hear us tomorrow.
It was just so much fun.